Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, we talk about how to have the money conversations with your parents. Stick around. That's coming up next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseka. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, King Ross.
Oh, boy. We do not need to get into that. Holy cow.
I think we can blow by it, but the long story, or the short story, I should say, is there's a great production in DC going on called Drunk Shakespeare, and I am joined on this podcast today by the one and only King Ross from the production, who I won't say was selected from the audience, but was basically forced into the kingship by a friend of ours.
Yeah. That turned into a very fun night. I did not want to be the center of attention in that, and I really wasn't, but the production was amazing. If you're in DC or if you're in a city, I think they do it in a bunch of cities. It was very funny, fairly crude at a bunch of times, but even not being a particularly good student of Shakespeare, I really enjoyed myself. It was hilarious and a lot of fun. We're celebrating something else today, Dan.
Are we?
Which is that a different Dan is no longer the owner of the Washington Commanders. The Washington Commanders have been sold to the Josh Harris Group. I couldn't be more pumped.
Yeah, I'm hoping we put the Dan Snyder chapter of the Commanders very far in the rearview mirror, and we have stuff to look forward to, hopefully as soon as this season, but I'll take anything in my lifetime.
How could it be worse? How could it be worse than how he has run the organization?
I don't want to know. I don't want to know how it can be worse. I don't think it can. I think just, you know, sometimes a new start is just all you need to change perspective. The locker room, by all accounts, was fairly toxic. So if everyone is optimistic, maybe you enter with just a clean slate and feel like you're giving it your all for something new instead of just all the baggage that came with the last almost 25 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, it was pretty ugly. $6 billion, the largest price tag ever for a professional sports team. I don't know if that's a good business move or not, but the Josh Harris Group is now an NFL owner.
They are. Good for Dan for cashing out. He definitely left with a profitable investment.
I mean, yeah, those are shocking numbers. They really are. Those are really, really big numbers for a private business, especially with the NFL financing rules on how much one person needs to be able to come up with in cash. Really crazy stuff.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So what we wanted to talk about today is discussing money with your parents. And for many of us, a lot of our earliest money teachings come from our parents, whether those were positive or negative. And I had kind of two funny stories that I wanted to share really quickly. So I always had like expensive taste as a kid. I'm not sure where that came from. I got into things that I probably had no business being into. One of them was that I apparently liked lobster. And as a kid, I was introduced to lobster and apparently was like, this is fantastic. And we would go out to eat and I would ask my mom for lobster. And she would very politely tell me, oh, honey, it doesn't look like they have it tonight. And then apparently I must have been like 5 or 6 years old at the point this happened. I look over and there's a menu board, like a chalkboard sitting there. And I said, no, but look, mom, lobster. And I like sounded out through it. And I'm sure my mom in that moment goes, holy crap, this is not good.
That's so funny.
So, you know, that led me to a second thought in my head, which I thought was very funny, is that when I used to ask for things as a kid, my mom learned she had to be very careful with her language around me. So she would say something to the effect of, we don't have money for that right now, rather than just saying no. Like, that's what she was trying to tell me. It was no, but she said, we don't have money for that right now. So, you know, this is in the era when you'd be in a department store and you'd write a check. And apparently, in front of this woman who is checking us out, I say very loudly to my mom, but mom, I thought we don't have money for that right now. While she's getting ready to hand over a piece of paper that is purely a promise that we have some money. And so apparently this cashier looks at my mom and is like, yo, like, what's going on here? Like, are you people broke trying to pass a bad check? And she completely had to change her language with, like, how she told me no to something along the lines of, we're choosing not to spend money on that right now, or something that was a little bit more specific, because I apparently took it very literally. And both of those memories crack me up.
That's so funny. I love those stories. Speaking of checks, to this day, there's a gas station I drive by on the Eastern Shore of Maryland that still puts names of people who passed bum checks up on the marquee. I mean, I'm surprised they still take checks at all, but apparently they do, and people are still trying to get away with, you know, checks that they don't have money to honor.
Yeah. I mean, that's your first sign, is that if you're still trying to use a check at a gas station in 2023, that's the first red flag for me.
Yeah. I wonder what some of my daughter's early memories about money conversations are going to be. I think I sent you a note about this, that we've been having some funny exchanges recently where, you know, I own a business. My home is collateral for the business loan that we got. And we were doing some administration with that loan. And I was talking about it out loud to my wife. And my daughter heard that, like, the bank can take our house if something happens to this loan. And she had a lot of follow-up questions. I had to sit her down and explain collateral and how it works and how they're not going to take our house unless something crazy happens. But I just wonder if I'm having those conversations in the right way and what's going to stick with her as an adult. But it's funny nonetheless, just taking a step backwards and thinking about the types of things I have to explain to her.
I mean, yeah. How do you explain collateral to a kid?
I tried. I used the framework of, like, if someone wanted to borrow her toy, but she didn't know who it was, so she needs to take their toy. And when she gets hers back, then the other person can get their toy back too. So you're secure in knowing that you're going to get the thing you love back.
All right. So the funny thing about that, Dan, is what's going to end up happening is your daughter's going to be on the playground, like, arbitraging kids' toys in no time. I am certain she's going to find some scam where she starts taking kids' collateral and then, like, selling it to other people.
Maybe. She's already negotiating with my grandmother. My grandmother has a lot of very fancy and nice things. And every time we go, she's trying to work out a way to come home with one of those things. And she was like, all right, you keep this. I'm going to take that and I'll bring it back. I don't know. I think I might be in trouble.
Yeah, you're definitely in trouble. So what we wanted to talk about is what happens when it goes the other way, when it's not parents talking to kids about their money, but it's kids talking to their parents about money. And this comes up in so many different ways in our practice. And we just thought it was helpful to have a conversation around it. And I don't know that we're going to make any hard and fast points here, but first of all, having the conversation is so important. And whether you're worried about them having the right resources, whether you are just wanting to understand what the situation is so that you can be prepared for it, there's a lot that can go into discussing money with your parents, which is not traditionally the path that that conversation has gone. You've gone from being a learner and a student as the kid there. How do you start to flip that switch and go the other way as the kid wanting to understand and talk to mom and dad about money?
Yeah, it's so hard because I feel like money within a family is often a very taboo subject. So you don't have a lot of experience having those conversations with your parents unless they're particularly open and progressive about it. There are a number of ways that you can start this conversation, and I'm curious what you've seen in the past that works. But I think one of the easiest that I've seen is the person coming to their parents and saying, I've been starting to work on my personal financial plan. And as part of that, I want to make sure that I'm prepared for what I need to do, if anything, to help you guys. Have you worked with a planner or do you have a plan? And then kind of start the conversation that way, where you're coming to it from a place of, I'm preparing for myself. Here's what I'm doing. And as part of that, I'm supposed to talk to you. So I think it's a little less threatening that way. I've seen that play out a couple times and it's been productive.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So I think now most of the time this has come up for me with clients where I'm speaking about it. And again, it could be, hey, are we expecting an inheritance? Is that something that should be baked into the plan? Some people that are expecting an inheritance don't want to count on it, and that's fine. But for other people, it's very meaningful. And there might be, you know, meaningful family wealth that needs to be passed down. In other situations, it's being worried about costs. Are mom and dad secure? If they had a healthcare event that's going to require a lot of capital for most of us, and I know I would put myself in this category, I don't want to see my parents not get the best quality care that they could use or need. I would want to make sure that I'm kicking in to help with that if I needed to. And that's something that you need to prepare for as part of being in that situation, if those resources may be a little bit thin. Sometimes those things are related. But yeah, as you're doing your planning, I think you can add the advisor as the kind of third party and use that as like the lightning rod to get the conversation started. I was having this conversation and they asked, and I thought it might be important to bring it up rather than saying, hey, mom, I was thinking about how much money you've got and was hoping you could tell me about it. So I think having that kind of, even if they're not part of the actual conversation, but having that third party that has been the spark or the catalyst, the introduction point for why we're talking about this now, why did this come up? Why was I thinking about this for you? I think that can sometimes soften the entry point into that conversation.
Absolutely. And then maybe even in that process, if they've been working with someone, that's a great opportunity to meet who they've been working with, whether that be a financial planner, an estate attorney, because those are likely people who you're going to have to deal with in the future. And having that connection already makes things easier. So once you start this conversation, you're at the table with your parents on Thanksgiving after a stomach full of turkey or whatever it is. What are the types of things that you want to learn about their plans and kind of document or at least think about at the end of that conversation?
So I think number one is a little bit of an inventory, right? And whether that's just a writing down of where the accounts are, even if you're not getting access to them, or even if you're not going to be sharing how much money is in what accounts, I think having an inventory of who do I need to even speak to is incredibly powerful. What institutions do I need to reach out to if something were to happen to you, and let them know so that we can handle your affairs and your estate in a way that is effective? I think that's job one, is just like, let's know where everything is.
100%. I'm glad you started there, because I do think that's the most important and can be so hard to unwind if someone has a lot of different relationships and increasingly less paper to document it, because we aren't getting paper statements in the mail for the most part anymore. Someone could have accounts all across the world and you might be spending years trying to uncover where they are.
All right. So that brings me to point number two, which is some digital access to those places where you are going to receive that information, right? And so for a lot of us, email, two-factor authentication is turned on. Like, I couldn't get into my parents' email even if I had to in most cases, because I'm simply not set up to do that. So adding somebody, some email services have like an emergency contact or like something that you can add where if you haven't been active for a long time, I think that can be a really valuable tool. But just some sort of access to, how do I get to these things? And how do I get access to, whether, like, even think about like a social media account. How do you shut somebody's Facebook down if you don't have access to it? You don't necessarily want people getting friend requests over the next 20 years from somebody that is no longer with us, right? So I think thinking through access to some of those digital and online places, and again, even if this is a sealed envelope, something that you pull out and you update the passwords once a year, that's probably the worst part of this, by the way, is dealing with all the password management and figuring out how do you get access to that. I don't know if anybody's come up with a great solution there so that you could do that intergenerationally, but that's going to be the toughest part, is documenting and then having access to that in a safe way that is not otherwise putting their digital lives at risk.
Yeah, absolutely. In conjunction with that, just important points of contact. We talked about CPAs, financial advisors, attorneys before, and the actual estate documents, if there are any. So that's the other thing. First, seeing where they are in that process and making sure they have the paperwork and the legal documents drafted and executed. And if not, hopefully encouraging them to do so, but at least starting to organize what they want things to look like and making sure they know the impact of what they are or aren't doing.
Yeah, I mean, the three main legal documents that we talk about in estate planning, one is the living will, one is an advanced medical directive, and the third is typically the power of attorney. And all three of those are really relevant. And if you are named as the power of attorney, but you can't prove it, you are effectively not the power of attorney. The document has absolutely no power if you can't access it, present it upon request, and be present with that information. And so if you're going to need to be in that situation, or you're even thinking that it could be a possibility, making sure that you have like a thumb drive with those or some copy that you can present in the situation where it's required, really, really important. It's not enough just to have had it drafted.
Yeah. And the unfortunate reality is medical things can come up anytime without notice. So putting those off can seem like you might have a little bit of a window in order to get everything in order. But really, I would encourage people to get on it, right? Because something could happen tomorrow, and then you don't want to cause extra stress on your loved ones in trying to just get set up to help the continuity of your finances.
And then I think it comes down to, you know, what are we worried about in terms of resources? And so the one that comes up most often is really long-term care or some version of it. And so I would have that conversation. Now, first of all, I bullied my parents into buying a long-term care policy, and I did it many years ago while I was working as an advisor, because I was like, hey, this is really important. Let's go ahead and get this taken care of. But just knowing, is there something out there from an insurance perspective? Do they have life insurance? Do they have long-term care insurance? Those are the two big ones that you want to be asking about so that you know what resources are available if they need that. And again, you don't want to be scrambling and looking for that stuff when stuff has already gone haywire. If you're already under a lot of duress and family stress because there's been a medical event that's now requiring this, that's a bad time to be seeking that information out for the first time. Just an inventory of what's out there from a protection planning standpoint, I think can be really helpful.
If you're listening to all this and thinking, that's a whole lot to cover post-Thanksgiving meal. I don't know why that became the holiday in my mind that we're doing this at, but just roll with the example for now.
Thinking about Thanksgiving in July, Dan. I like it.
I'm ready. I think it's football, and Thanksgiving football is among the best football. That is a big conversation, and it doesn't have to happen all at once. I think the hardest part is just getting started and breaking down the door where now the information is more free-flowing, and then that can be an ongoing conversation that you tackle little bits at a time. And as you get more comfortable, it becomes more easy to talk about it, and hopefully information can flow more efficiently both directions, because your plans are intertwined for a period of time. And you know, it's helpful just not to make that a taboo subject anymore, especially if you can be of value to your parents as they're planning. So if they're thinking about gifting or anything like that, you know, there might be more efficient ways for them to accomplish their goals if they can talk to you about it. And similarly, if you are intent on helping them in their retirement or helping them pay for medical costs down the road, there might be a more efficient way for you to plan for that if you can speak with them about it too.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously we're getting into a lot of super nuanced stuff. So this is not going to be uniquely applicable to anybody's situation, but I have seen situations where the kids would like to buy some form of long-term care insurance for the parent. And generally what you would want to do there, there's a few different structures for long-term care, but the one that I've been reaching for, and again, we don't sell insurance, but in terms of recommending to clients and then, you know, getting those policies evaluated, generally a life insurance contract with an advanced long-term care rider is going to be your better bet there. And that means that you're creating the life insurance so there is still a payout at some point, and you've got access to it in advance for a long-term care need. Those, I think, probably work best where you're saying, okay, I might be on the hook for this money. I can insure that risk now. And if I don't need it, or if that isn't necessary, there's still a return of capital. We're not just destroying capital. We're either offsetting this risk by asking the insurance company to cover it, or there's going to be a return of capital at some rate of return just because of the inherent nature of the life insurance.
I love looking at those policies as an option as opposed to traditional long-term care as well. It's worth quoting everything just to see what is available to you. The other thing is starting earlier is much better than starting later if you're looking at insurance as a potential tool in your toolbox. So if you're waiting till 70s or 80s to have that conversation, it's going to be a lot harder to accomplish that goal than if you started in someone's 50s or 60s.
So Dan, what are some of the pitfalls if you're having this conversation? Because I think there's a lot of ways, and I think some of the nerves around maybe why people don't bring this up is they're picturing some form of stress. And look, we know money is emotional. It's emotional for yourself, let alone when you start introducing other people to it. I think there's a parent dynamic where they don't want to be asking for help and they don't want to be a burden to their kids. I would just say part of having this conversation is to make sure that they're not a burden, or at least to anticipate if there is going to be a burden. But I would never present it that way. I would just say, hey, as part of working on this planning, I want to make sure that we're prepared and that we don't have a sudden burden. But what are some of the other ways that this can kind of go a little bit off the rails?
Yeah, I think unfortunately, one of the things I've seen most often is just like shame or embarrassment of parents like opening up their finances to their kids. The generation above ours, I believe, invested very heavily in their children and education and all these things to put them up for success. And sometimes it means they're under-resourced for retirement. And, you know, they've been trying to shield their children from that reality for a long time. So sometimes they might not be open to opening up the curtain, so to speak, because they're embarrassed that they're just not as well off as they appear to be. And, you know, finding a way to come to terms with that can be difficult. And I think it's all about just how you approach the conversation and hopefully peeling the onion slowly and making sure that they know that you're a team in this goal.
Yeah, I think approaching it with as much empathy as possible. You know, if money has been an emotionally charged subject inside the family, I think you need to approach it from a very non-judgmental perspective. There's no finger wagging as part of this conversation. There shouldn't be any high tensions that you bring into it where you're trying to just get your point across that, you know, well, now look what you did. I think, you know, as planners, we are so used to seeing different situations from very well resourced to very under resourced for what people are trying to do. And the key is just not judging people, right? And when people feel judged and they feel like their choices are being called into question and evaluated in a harsh way, they're going to lock up and they're going to stop sharing. And so if you're worried about that, if you think that that's what's starting to happen, take a breath, step away from the table and try to come back to it with as open and just as caring of an approach as you possibly can, because that's the only way you're going to really get results here.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'd love to hear if you've got any thoughts or feedback, things that we didn't think about. Is this a conversation that you've had with your parents? Is it a conversation that you've had with kids? If they've been bringing that up or who introduced it, if you've got feedback for us or ways that you've been successful in having this discussion around money across generations, checkyourbalances@outlook.com is the email address for the show. We're in the process of ordering our new swag item. We did get a suggestion for bucket hats, which I thought that was really cool. I don't think we're going to do it. I think we're already locked in on the wine keys. It's just a matter of getting the order placed, but I do like the suggestion.
I do too. I'd rock a Check Your Balances bucket hat out on the golf course.
Maybe we'll do that as a special one-off. We appreciate everybody tuning in this week. We hope this was helpful. We will catch you all next time.